Welcome to the Breaks and Joins podcast. I'm Sue Mayo, and I'm working on a project about repair of our stuff, ourselves, and our communities. And in each episode, we meet somebody who's really deeply involved somehow in repair of all kinds. Really hope you enjoy the podcast. Make sure you like and subscribe and share it with your friends.
My name is Chuck Blue Lowry, and I am a filmmaker working on the project. I will be editing all of the podcasts. The podcasts have been recorded in line with social distancing measures, so if you do hear the occasional background noise, like a dog barking or a dodgy internet connection, it's all just part of the recording from home setup. Regardless of that, we have some fantastic conversations in store for you, and we really hope you enjoy the podcast. Thanks for listening.
We're really delighted today to welcome Madeline Tenoto, who runs Mads Do and Mend, a CIC, that's a community interest company, whose aims are to teach people the skills to mend their clothing and textiles. And I came across Mads on Instagram. So we had that funny moment just now where I kind of felt like I'd met you before, because one of the lovely things you do is you post videos from home showing what you've made. Are you at home now?
I am. I'm actually in my wardrobe, which is slightly fitting, but it also doubles up as a home office. I always joke that I'm sort of one step above Harry Potter or below, but sort of living in a small cupboard. But yes, that's where the sort of admin happens. And then I have a loft studio where I do my sort of sewing and making and mending.
Oh, that's fantastic. And Chuck and I are exceptionally partisan. I think we have to confess this, because we always really enjoy having fellow South Londoners.
Yes,
on the podcast, because we think South London is so great. But I have to confess that today I'm in Dorset. I'm not home.
Ah, nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah, so I've escaped. Yeah, yeah, that's great. I think that one thing I really enjoy about your films is just the pleasure you take in transforming clothes, in remaking, mending, upcycling. Did Mads Do and Mend start from a really kind of personal desire to do that, an enjoyment of sewing?
I've always had an interest in fashion and making, and even as a child, one of the first projects I remember is a Kylie video, and she had a sort of fancy straw hat, and having a straw hat from home, and I can remember making these sort of little flowers out of some fabric and sort of sticking them on. Your ability to sort of transform something has always been there, really. Yeah, it's been a sort of long running theme.
And did you start in the fashion industry?
I didn't, actually. I took a strange sort of sidestep when I was studying A-levels. I got really interested in theatre, so, you know, theatre study, so studying text. And then that led me to do a foundation course at Wimbledon Art School. And then from that, I actually studied set design. So a very different sort of step. And they offered costume as well. But I think the costume design was it's a fantastic course, but it was quite a formula of learning, sort of very traditional, like corsetry, Elizabethan, historical costume. Which is an amazing foundation. But I think at the time I wasn't that interested in that. So I ended up doing set design because I liked the idea of designing sets and sort of worlds, I guess, and sort of dipping into costume. But the reality is it's a lot of model making, and it's collaborative, but in a very different sort of way. And I think post sort of uni, I realised that's not quite me. And actually, I love to collaborate, but it wasn't quite the way I like to, I guess. Yeah.
So did you take a completely different route at that point?
Yeah. So then I just, you know, I sort of left uni and sort of needed work. So I ended up teaching English as a foreign language, so completely differently. And then I had a studio. We had a little gallery in Dalston. So I must have been about 23, 24, and sort of would teach part time, and then had this studio where I sort of started getting more back into a more fine art practice. And then from that, the person next door to me, a woman, was a jeweler. So it was great sort of dipping into that. And I think that sort of reignited that. And also being a shared space, we had painters, we had musicians. In fact, the end person, he used to build sets. So he was a set builder. So very, very different. And then from that, actually, I got interested in millinery. So sort of had a few years of sort of working part time, having a studio. And then I decided to study millinery, which sort of led me back into fashion, if you see what I mean.
That's so interesting because we've spoken to somebody else in the podcast, who Molly Sirrett, who is somebody who started in theatre design and has ended up doing millinery.
So yes,
that's such an interesting pathway. And she's also very committed to upcycling and recycling.
I think because theatre, I think millinery does have a sort of theatrical element. If you put on a hat, people really change their physicality. It's really interesting kind of how you change your body and how you work out an outfit that works with a hat. You know, it's quite a sort of dramatic, you know,
activity. I think that's absolutely right. And also it's that thing a bit like people often say with getting your hair done, that it can be an incredible kind of transformative feeling to put on a hat. It's a lift, it's a celebration. I think that's a really good connection. What was the seed then of creating Mads Do and Mend?
Then from my millinery course, I ended up actually at the end of the course, there was an option to work with a company who and do sort of 2 to 3 weeks work experience. And they were a retail supplier. So they were mostly based in hats and accessories sort of more broadly, but not jewellery. They had their offices in Luton, this company, and which is actually the historical home of hat making in Britain. In case you didn't know, it's a cheeky fact there. So I did sort of 2 or 3 weeks work experience there. And then from that, I got a job. So they essentially supplied the British European high street with sort of hats, accessories. So but that would cover things like formal hats, like wedding, pretty much the whole high street, sort of M&S, Next, all of that sort of thing. And then into knitted accessories, straw hats, and then things like bags and things for kids wear, sort of the sort of broader spectrum of accessories. And I sort of worked there for 5 years or so. And then there was a sort of, it was a very interesting time because that was right when the financial crash hit. So from this big company sort of went into obviously recession, and that industry was hit very hard because obviously the drop in the dollar, the drop in the pound, it was a very stressful, but actually bizarrely interesting time in terms of understanding economy or how the economy works. In terms of just seeing, you know, how the price of something sort of, a few weeks ago, and as it sort of devalued, you know, literally through the financial crash and all of these things on the water, you know, knowing what to do with the stock. And, you know, it was a very sort of eye-opening time in terms of understanding retail or the sort of risks of retail. And it's sort of like a knife edge, you know, how things can sort of go horribly wrong. You know, and essentially the company went into administration. So a sort of bizarre experience. But at the same time, from that, a much smaller company sort of emerged that I was a part of, and they kept me on as a designer. But essentially the relationship slightly changed. So we used to have a huge warehouse that then changed to being a tiny company of sort of 6-7 of us. So we then worked much more closely with Chinese manufacturers. So they sort of managed all the delivery of stock. So it's very, but then I was much more focused just on design. So in some ways it was really creative for me in that sense. Yeah.
I think something so interesting there about scale, isn't there? And about the different costs, in a way, of the scale of enterprises and what happens. I think it's something I struggle with all the time, which is I completely understand the need for economies of scale. And I understand that organizations get very big, but I get so worried about how any kind of quality of relationship and care remains possible once you're in a very big organization and have to put a lot of energy into keeping the organization going. That becomes the goal.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I remember my boss saying, the thing is, as the machine gets bigger, the more you have to oil it. It was an incredible you know, time as in sort of highs and lows, but of really understanding, you know, the knock-on effect of one decision and one supplier to another supplier and you know, down the chain. I remember, because obviously you worked with administrators, you've got the list of everyone who was sort of owed money, including, you know, the milkman. It was shocking. It was absolutely shocking, you know, and I was about 28, 29, something like that, when that sort of happened, and sort of realising it was all terribly exciting, you know, sort of designing and seeing your work sort of in the high street. And then when things sort of take a nosedive, seeing the kind of reality, and also the biggest thing for me was seeing the reality of all of this stock that had just been cancelled, that had just, because essentially everyone's hedging their bets, retailers are pulling in because obviously they're scared about, you know, their financial commitments, but pulling out of, and what you're left with is vast amounts of items that have absolutely no destination, and the waste of it was appalling. It was absolutely appalling. You know, and while I've carried on sort of working with the company, I could never quite shed that. So even the visual image of a whole warehouse full of items, you know, that essentially have nowhere to go. So it's then, you know, it's selling to market stalls or a different sort of avenue. But yeah, it was a very strange time.
And you know, and presumably also stuff just being trashed.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I guess I didn't see any of that, but I know it happens, you know, in terms of burning stock or getting rid of it, you know, and also, you know, witnessing sort of some of these things, you know, it's a 6-month journey, you know, in a season, you know, from doing a design, getting it approved, getting somebody else to approve it, making amendments, blah, blah, blah. And there's a lot of time in lots of people's lives. And then obviously production, and then a month on the sea. And just seeing that being obliterated, you know, with a series of a chain of events, you know.
Yeah. So did you get out of that then?
No, well, I carried on because then I sort of worked directly, essentially, with the factory, with a couple of smaller factories. So while in the larger company, you know, you would have had probably 100 different factories you worked for, because they essentially produce lots of varied items. So factories in India that just worked on beaded bags or this sort of thing. So then it sort of shrank down to just working very closely with one factory and one supplier in China that with the core business was hats, knitted accessories, soft accessories. And actually, I found that better as a designer, because you could really, in 1 week, it'd be like, right, design a Thomas the Tank Engine set of backpacks. And then the afternoon, you're doing like beaded bag, evening bags. And it's sort of, you know, it's quite a lot to sort of shift, especially when that's not my back. You know, I'd studied millinery, you know. So actually then honing in on a smaller kind of area, I think I definitely produce better stuff, better designs, you know.
So interesting, I think, that you've, it's not full circle at all because it's so different, but you've made something that you love doing into a community interest company.
Yes.
So yeah, you've decided to kind of formalise Mads Doing Men. So maybe you could take us through how that began, just for you individually, and what the change is now, why you've decided to create a company.
Really, I think that came, so I'd had a period of working with the factories and freelancing then for a factory. And then I think the freelance contract came to an end, and I just was like, I could go and look for more sort of work like this. But actually, I think I'd sort of felt to some degree, I'd kind of learnt what I wanted. I don't know. I was at a point where I sort of didn't really want to carry on that journey. So I had a sort of flirtation with the idea of becoming a textiles teacher. So I got a job as in the textiles department of a secondary school, which was amazing. It's actually one of my best jobs. It was mad. The pace of school is insane, you know. But I just realized I loved working with teenagers, specifically teenagers. And I ran a little textiles club, and then I would help in the sessions. I also did food, which is really not my background, but ended up sort of doing that. I realized I didn't actually want to become a teacher. I think it was because it's not free enough, you know. I think because there's a sort of, obviously, there's a curriculum you need to follow. So after that, I had my son, and there was a sort of career break, as you might say, when my son was born. And actually, through that process of sort of, you know, being a mother, I actually had some real mental health difficulties. I really struggled with postnatal depression. there was a lot of sort of self-reckoning that kind of came up for me. I'd sort of then had, would do sort of small craft fairs and things like that when he was quite little. But I sort of reached a point where I think I just lost complete direction. I lost sort of interest to a degree. I think I was quite burnt out, you know, sort of creatively, and also the demands of a mother, you know, and having a young child. And actually, I just took a step back, and you know, it was a really low point. And I then started seeing a therapist. And in the sort of what came up in the sessions, or one of the sessions, was this decision whether to stop and just go, right, you know, this is it, that's enough, no more designing, no more making, just take a real step and do something completely different, like, I don't know, physiotherapy, landscape gardening, or something like that. And I had this sort of like, oh, I don't know what to do. And ultimately, it sort of led to, I did have this sort of basket of mending and a whole host of things that sort of sat there for a while, sort of unattended to. And I just decided to mend them, just because it was like, well, you know, it's kind of bothering me that they're sitting there and waiting and nothing's happening. And I couldn't sort of do anything new, like creatively, because everything in my previous lives, it's always creation of something new, designing from scratch, buying material from scratch. That process was very sort of intrinsic in my practice, let's say. And this was totally different. You know, it's taking something you've already got and deciding to, you know, mend it. And actually, it really helped in the sense that it's that slowing down. I think it's the slowing down. You're working with your hands. You can only go as fast as your hands. I then looked up in a couple of books about how to darn, and I loved darning. I still love darning because it's quite sort of fine work, but it's slow work. And I think it just gave me, it really did give me a very different view of fashion and clothing, you know, and took a step back from that kind of push for always something new into re-looking at things you already have. And I think those questions in my mind through that experience of working in fashion retail were always there, but it was sort of thinking about looking at it in a different way. And I think really the mending, I find such a sort of soothing, sort of cathartic process in many ways. And I think also when it comes to sort of setting up the CIC, before that I'd done a mending station at Lewisham, because I really believe, I truly believe in the sort of restorative, it's not just mending, but obviously that's my sort of angle on it, but the restorative process of working with your hands. Obviously machines are so important, but I think working with your hands to start off with, in order to kind of just create a bit of space for yourself and see where that leads and just be. From that, I thought, oh, actually, this is something I'd like to explore more. And I set up the mending station in Lewisham Shopping Centre. And it was that that really cemented the sort of process of inviting people into a space, you know, let's just start with your jeans. And it always happens, you know, people, I know there'll be some amazing science bods who can give all the data, but you know, it's a practical thing you can do. So obviously you're approaching it, you know, I want to mend these jeans. But what I found so much is that people sort of are initially a bit nervous, you know, not quite sure what to do. Once they feel a bit relaxed, then they're sort of, I think your guard comes down, and then people just start talking. And sometimes it's very personal things, sometimes it's not at all. But I think that kind of group scenario where people mend and chat and is something quite magical. And I think it's a really important thing to be able to have everywhere, you know, have access to, because it's a practical thing. I mean, especially the cost of living crisis, you know, any, you know, if you can save one jumper or a pair of jeans and a pair of socks, you know, that's three or four things that you don't purchase again. And not to mention, obviously, the impact on the environment. That sort of process really cemented the idea to then become a CIC and try and formalise it. And then I work with a housing association and other organisations to run community workshops, and then also, you know, private paid for workshops, just really exploring these skills.
So what does a week look like for you? What's the kind of balance of what you're doing?
So I teach two. So I work with Clarion Housing, and they approached me following coming to the mending station in the shopping centre. And I've been working with them for about 18 months. So I teach two workshops a week and I have an assistant at each one. And it's really where they have community centres. So that's a really key part of it, because obviously you need the space. And the relationship with them has been really brilliant over, because they're very supportive of it. And through this, they've really seen how the project has grown and how, you know, I deliver in Southwark and in Lewisham Borough. And, you know, we have started off with two or three people, but in each one over the past year, 6 months, because they sort of started at different times, we've seen sort of 12 to 15 people at each session coming every week to do something, you know. And obviously, because you build such a long relationship with people, then it starts off with mending, and people always have mending. But then sometimes people like, oh, I've got this bit of fabric, I'd like to. So it's really amazing to be able to facilitate like making a cushion or making a dress from scratch. And there's a real mix of sort of people who've had a lot of experience, people have had no experience. And sometimes people just come and they might not be in the mood, but they still come and they just sit and have a cup of tea. And I think that's really important. I don't want it to be a pressurized space where you feel like you always have to be. It's so important that people just feel welcome. And also, I think in that sort of linking mending and mental health, to meet people where they are in that moment, you know. And if they're in a kind of really creative mood, then great. But if they're not, I think it's important. I feel very humbled that they still come, even if they're in a terrible place, because actually getting out of the house is a big achievement if you're not in a good place, you know. And I think that's not to be dismissed.
Yeah, I think that's something that on our wider project, we're just so interested in how the kind of there's the physical, you know, these physical acts of repair. And quite clearly other stuff is going on through that, and conversation is going on through that, and building community is going on through that. And then that helps you kind of think about and look at even bigger than that, you know, and how are we living at the moment? How are we living in what incredibly wasteful ways?
And also lonely ways, you know, lonely ways, I think. And I think somehow offering the sewing and mending, I think that the fact it's not like come and learn, come and make a bag. I think the fact it's coming with mending is that it can be very small, you know, and maybe that as an introduction feels less daunting, you know, that actually most people have something like, you know, the strap's a bit loose on this bag. And also, you know, myself and my assistants, we have no qualms about doing little jobs for people, because actually I feel like, you know, I've had lots of sewing teachers or different teachers, and there can be a sort of pressure, but sometimes, you know, to sort of do things. But actually, if you've never used a machine before, they can be quite scary. You know, they can run away with you. And actually, I think it's more important to almost be open and be welcoming first, and then let people sort of, you know, build up their confidence through taking it slowly. I think that's actually a big thing, is trying to slow things down and not be always. I think I lived for a long time in my 20s and 30s and that sort of chasing things, chasing new, chasing fresh, you know, and with that comes consumption. And I think to slow things down and appreciate that is maybe my next 20, 30 years.
Yeah. And I think that the important thing is that there's a huge desire to do it. It's not as if you're pushing an agenda that nobody wants to pick up. Actually, once the invitation is there, I think the evidence is that so many people want to be part of that. And I think there is a huge satisfaction in bringing something back that you couldn't use anymore. Just that sense of kind of rescue almost. And one of the people who listens to the Breaks and Joins podcast sent me a message about 6 weeks ago to say that he hasn't learned to mend, but he's made really good friends with the local dry cleaners where they mend things, and that now he feels he's got this completely new wardrobe, because he didn't throw things away, but he put them in a cupboard that he never went into if they were torn or if there was a stain. And now he's just not going to do that anymore. And he's going to take things and get them mended. And he's made friends with this local woman who does it. And I really sense that something sort of reclaiming, really, from the chaos that can happen.
Yes, definitely. I think that's so true. And I think also lots of people, there's a lot of different ways of doing it, like having repair cafes. It's not a kind of single person. It's not just my organization's sort of I'm not going to fix all the problems or all the things of everyone in this country or even Southeast London. So it's sort of incumbent that, you know, there are lots of different approaches, like dry cleaners, obviously having seamstresses. But I think actually generally people don't want to be wasteful, but sometimes people just don't know how to start, you know. And I think, you know, having the hubs I run and hopefully the workshops that I run gives people sort of a sort of access to finding out how to do things. And also a lot of mine are focused on hand skills, partly because I think it's really important that it's very accessible, and a lot of the kind of equipment that you need is actually very basic. You don't have to. That's often the thing that people ask me, oh, I really want to do this. Do I have to buy a sewing machine? It's like, no, you really don't. You know, there's a lot of things you can do by hand, and especially people are tight on space, especially in cities and or even generally. And actually, unless you're really going to use your sewing machine, I mean, you know, you don't need to have one. And actually, perhaps that's more of an argument for things like in my organisation of community workshops, where people can access equipment, but they don't need to own it themselves, you know. And I strongly sort of would push for that.
I think that's absolutely great. And in the hub in Bromley that's run by Greener and Cleaner Bromley, you can just go in anytime and there are two sewing machines. And I think that's the most generous and accessible way of kind of really opening up to people and letting them be autonomous too. If they know what they want to do, that's fine. And if they need a bit of help, that's fine as well. So now I'm going to ask you the killer question that we ask everybody at the end of the podcast. Can everything be mended?
Gosh, that's a big question. That's a big question. I think if there's a will, there's a way. I think if there's a will, there's a way. But also, if it's time to say goodbye, I don't feel it's, you should feel too bad about that if you've loved it and enjoyed it. But really, yeah, you feel that it's time to move on. I think that's okay too. Am I sitting on the fence too much with that? I don't know.
Absolutely not. And I think that one day I want to just make a podcast which is only this question.
Yeah.
From all the different respondents, because also there are things we shouldn't mend because they're rotten.
Yeah.
And it's better not to put energy into them. So I don't think we're asking it with a desire that people say everything can be. But I do think that it is clear that we can be mending much more than we do in a material sense. But no, all answers are absolutely welcome. I thought that was a lovely answer. I'd like to say thank you so much to Madeline for coming to talk to us. And I think there are so many fascinating threads in there about the kind of the hands and the intimacy of that and the care, but also for me about structures and how we make structures which are going to be part of repair and not part of just recreating another damaging system. So it's been really, really lovely to chat to you. Thank you and bye.
Oh, and to you. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening to the Breaks and Joins podcast. And I hope you'll enjoy listening to the other podcasts too. If you want more information about the project, you can find us on www.sumeo.co.uk. And also on our Instagram page, breaks_and_joins. We'd love to hear from you. A big shout out to our funders, Arts Council England, Necessity, and the Being Human Festival. And finally, I'd like to thank my wonderful editor, Chuck Blue Lowry, and Bob Carper, who wrote the music for the podcasts. Thanks, and hope to see you soon.